Hello and welcome to the Hansen Hour podcast, where we spend an hour or thereabouts deep diving into the band Hansen. I'm your host, Megan, and you can join in with me and a special guest each week as we talk about a range of Hansen-related topics. I'm so excited that you are here to join in on this, so grab a cuppa or a glass of red and settle in for an hour of fun. It's guaranteed to make you smile. Hi, welcome to episode Lucky 13. I can't believe we're here already. I say that every episode, but I can't. We're really, really lucky today to have Cliff Magnus coming in to chat with us. Cliff was the co-writer of Madeline, which we all just love, right? Well, I love. After I recorded this episode, I have had Madeline basically on repeat and stuck in my head, even driving to the grocery store. I'm just popping it on, walking around the aisles. It is such a good song, and it's been really nice to rediscover it again after talking to Cliff. So Cliff is incredible at what he does. He's a singer and a songwriter, a producer, but he's also a lyricist, which is, you know, basically means he's a wordsmith, a poet. He's fantastic with writing. So he did a lot of work with Avril Lavigne for her debut album Let Go, which is incredible. And he's also won Grammy Awards, been nominated for Academy Awards and Golden Globe Awards. He is incredible at what he does, and I really hope you will enjoy this chat. It was really important to me to have someone involved in the writing process, the co-writing process, because we've had people from the industry, or particularly the record, the way that the record was made. We've had a couple of different people. We've obviously had engineers. I've got Tom Lord Elgi coming on next week, who is an engineer, a mixer. We have had obviously Steve Greenberg from the label. We've had a couple of the people involved in different capacities, and I really wanted to sort of get that well-rounded view and have someone that was a co-writer. And Cliff was so kind with his time. It took me a long time to get him, but I did not give up. I go the mile for you to make sure that we're getting the best info that we can. So enjoy this episode. And coming up next week, I'll just let you know, it is Tom Lord Elgi, who was the mixer for Middle of Nowhere and has gone on to do a couple more. Why do I want to say activities with them? Worked with them a few more times. Okay, so much love. Bye. Hello and welcome back to the Hansen Hour. We are so lucky today to have Cliff Magnus with us, who was the co-writer on Madeline. Cliff, I am so thankful for you to be here today. I've been chasing you. Now, I will have no shame in saying for months. I have not let this go. I have wanted this interview for probably 4 or 5 months now. So thank you for finally being able to be here today. So appreciate it.
Hey, Megan. Pleasure to be here.
I would really like to hear just the backstory about how you came to be the co-writer of Madeline. What was the process of you sort of having your hat in the ring to be a part of this album?
Sure. I had worked with Carney and Wendy Wilson from Wilson Phillips on their record, The Wilsons. And it was they were signed to Mercury Records with Steve Greenberg. So we had, you know, we had written five or six songs, four of which ended up on their album. And I actually played, I assembled a band and performed on the Rosie O'Donnell show in New York City, who was, you know, was a big TV show back then. And they debuted their first single that they had written with their dad, Brian Wilson, from the Beach Boys. So we were really good friends. And so I got to know Steve during that process. And then he approached me when he signed Hanson to write a song with them or for them. And I thought it would be better to write with them. So he basically just set us up to co-write a song while they were visiting LA, you know, because they were and still are from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So they were out in LA writing for their first album and recording, you know, Umbop and all that other stuff too. And they came over to my studio in Santa Monica at the time, and we wrote Madeline.
Okay, so I had wondered about what it actually looks like when you're co-writing a song, whether you're in like the label or like the recording studio of the label, but you were at your home when you did this.
Yeah, I had for years and years, I've always had a studio at home. And then that's become more and more popular, you know, with digital technology. This was in the 90s and we hadn't converted to full digital recording yet. So it was still an analog world back then. You know, I had a 24 track machine and a large console and that kind of stuff. But this is the funniest part of the story, Megan. You know, back then, when the three boys showed up at my home, I expected, you know, just the three boys to write the song with, but the Hanson family, they had, at the time they had six children with one more on the way. So they did everything en masse. They showed up the entire family to our home. And, you know, I wrote with the three boys and Walker, their dad, sat in the studio with us. And mind you, my studio at the time, and this is another hilarious fact, my studio at the time was an old workshop. So it was literally one room that had all my gear. It had my grand piano, and crammed in there were three boys and their dad and myself and their brothers and sisters all out in my backyard playing with my kids, who were at the time, you know, about 12 and 7. So they were right at the same age as the Hanson kids. So they were getting along great. So it was sort of like they descended on the Magnus compound. But to answer your question, the way I write, generally, I've always, like I said, I've always had a room, either a detached garage or something that I've converted into a studio. So I've always written and, you know, started the writing process in that studio. And I've always tried to record the demo of the song as if it were a record, knowing that a lot of demos do become records. The work I did with Avril Lavigne, for instance, every single song that I wrote with her became the actual record. It was, you know, I recorded it that way, and all of those demos became the record. They weren't re-recorded, right? So the same is roughly true with Madeline. This is interesting. So the three boys came in the room, and Walker came in, and they basically sang for me a cappella a couple of songs they had worked up to show me how they sound. And oh my gosh, they were so tight and so perfectly in tune, singing together, and it was like a cohesive unit of perfection, you know. And I was just blown away, and they were singing like, you know, 5 feet from my ears. So it was quite impressive.
A cohesive unit of perfection. I love that.
because I come from a long history of vocalization. My mother was a choir director my entire childhood, and my two parents met actually in their college choir. My dad was the president of the choir. This is Texas Tech in Lubbock, Texas. So I grew up around music and around singing, right? So I know, I like to think that I know a really good vocalist when I hear one. So they were singing for me. I'm just like, wow, this is awesome. So I already had, before they showed up, I had kind of a little guitar riff already prepared for them. And so we all together, the four of us with Walker sitting in a chair on the wall, came up with Madeline right there on the spot in about an hour's time.
Oh my goodness. Okay, that was one of my questions. Was how long it took to write it. And it was in a day, right? Was in that one day.
Yeah, we wrote the song in about an hour, and then we recorded a rough what I like to call a draft of it. It's basically a sketch, a recorded sketch, which is basically a drum loop and a guitar and the vocal and the melody. And then we spent the next day polishing the lyrics. I actually drove to the home they were staying in. They were staying in what is now the equivalent of an Airbnb in Hollywood.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
The entire family, of course. And so I drove to their place to polish the lyric and bonded with him because I'm from Lubbock and they're from Tulsa. So they were complaining that they hadn't met anyone in LA who loved Dr. Pepper as much as they did. And I said, oh my gosh, I love Dr. Pepper. And so we bonded over Dr. Pepper at the house they were renting. I know it's just a funny side story, but I know you like this kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. That's what we're here for, the little stories.
Yeah, so it was fun.
I can only imagine. I've heard that during the process of songwriting or recording that Walker was always there. I think in your case, I read an interview that he, like you spoke about, he sat sort of in the room reading a book, sort of there but not there. So how did he just not involve himself in the process? And he just sort of sat back and let them go with you and just sort of figure it out? Or did he have any two cents to throw in?
he didn't once involve himself in the creative process. He just was there to support, and I reckon observe as well. He wasn't in there the complete time. I know that at some point he went into the kitchen of my house and visited with my wife, and my daughter, who was then 7, was getting so hungry by the late afternoon time of the day, and he and my wife were visiting so thoroughly that she decided to take it upon herself to learn and to make a Caesar salad right there on the spot by herself. and that's our Hansen story. That's our Hansen family story, is that our daughter learned to make it a Caesar salad while we were working.
Do they still have that memory of playing with the whole group out in the backyard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because our home was quite a revolving door of, artists. I mean, I worked with everyone from, The Urge to Lisa Marie Presley, Avril, Idina Menzel, Cara Diaguardi, all of these people, Kelly Clarkson, came to our home to work with dad in the back, you know.
Wow, what an incredible childhood to have.
And you know what, Megan? All of the artists were so kind and so generous. Not one was what you might think an artist would be. They were all very, very nice and very kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned that it took about an hour to write Madeline. Is that usual for you or for an artist? Is that quick? What would you say is like a normal sort of timeline to lay down like the bones of a song?
You know, because, you know, I've been doing this for a very long time, and I've realized, and it's sort of ingrained in me now, that if you don't have something you really like inside an hour, then you might as well, you know, quit for the day and start up tomorrow, or go get a coffee and refresh your brain, because you can't beat a dead horse. You know, you can't make something happen that's not going to happen. So, you know, I like to really have a good idea of what's going on at a very quick time. I've done a lot of writing in Nashville, and that's what they do there typically, is they being the songwriters, usually write about three songs a day. You know, they have a 10 o'clock in the morning writing session, they have a 2 o'clock in the afternoon writing session, and a 6 o'clock in the evening writing session, and they write three songs a day because they, you know, they know how to make it happen quickly. And I love that sort of adaptation of creating songs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Was there anything else in sort of your, was it always going to be Madeline, was there something else you were sort of working on together, or something in the background or a backup if Madeline sort of didn't work out, or was that the one?
You know, I just shouted out Madeline like that, and they all three loved it. So we went with it. It had a nice ring to it. It didn't sound cumbersome. You know, none of us knew anyone at the time named Madeline. It just sounded good.
Because that was my question, who came up with the name Madeline, but it sort of just came up with itself.
Yeah, it just sort of popped out of my mouth, you know, so.
Yeah.
That was it.
I wanted to just touch on something that I was talking to you about, which is one of my favorites.
One second. Hang on.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, my sound system cut off. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Oh,
that's okay. I wanted to talk to you about the Oprah special in 1997, where have you seen it?
I was
trying to talk about this a little bit. So they do, like, it's one of my favorite TV moments. They do. Oprah does it, like, throws to the audience for like Q&A, and of course the audience is just like 9 to 15 year old girl. And this little girl puts her hand up and she's like, you know, who did you write the song Madeline about? Because my name's Madeline. And Oprah's like, oh, you know, do you think maybe like it could be you, like the song could be about you. And there's like this hyperventilation moment where she starts like being in a panic, like, oh my God, like, could this song be about me? It's one of my favorite moments. You should look it up. It's very, very sweet. And even as an adult,
it's very sweet. I'm sure it's on YouTube. I'll look it up.
It's really, really cute. I wanted to, so I had reached out to Alan Shipley. So there's a couple of co-writers on this album. There's yourself, there's Alan Shipley, there's obviously Barry and Cynthia, who's now passed. There's the other guy that they still work with, which all the fans are going to be like, oh my goodness, why can't I think of his name right now? He's got a beard and wears a hat.
Okay, you can think of it.
Alan Shipley was going to come on, but then there was like a scheduling conflict and I've never got around to getting back in contact with her. But she had some really sort of choice and riled up the fan base a little bit with some of the things that she'd said about the band, saying that Taylor was the only one that had any talent and that Zach, she like sent them all out because Zach was frustrating and she wanted to just work with Taylor. I sort of weirdly find that somewhat of a stretch because everyone that I speak to is just so, has so much accolades to say about their behavior and as young children and how lovely they were and how amazing it was to work with. This is the only one I've come up against that was a little bit different to that story. Did you have any tricky moments?
Not at all. No. Because at the time, little Zach was, I think he was like 10 maybe, or, you know, he was around 10. And, you know, my daughter was 7 and my son was 12. So he was just like part of the family to me. I mean, that, you know, 10-year-olds are a little irreverent, you know, here and there. And I found him to be, you know, part of the group, you know. I mean, obviously at the time, Taylor was the standout sort of mega talent at the time, but you could feel and understand that he was part of a cohesive family band unit. I mean, trying to separate them was not a good idea creatively, nor with their morale or their energy. I mean, they loved being together. They fed off of each other. They came up with melodies and lyrics together, including Zach. So, you know, I never once had a problem with that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, to me, it was understood. It was, they were all one to me.
Yeah, I really love just now hearing you talk about how, well, just in terms of morale and energy, separating them wasn't a good idea. And I think,
it's important to them, and that's the way they grew up, and that's the way they are being. You know, they're living their adulthood, and it's perfectly natural for them to want to do some side projects by themselves. That's, you know, any creative person needs to spread their wings a bit and experiment with that sort of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And for them, they like to come back to the nest, and that's their security and their confidence, and that's great.
Yeah, agree. Mm-hmm. So I also have some stats here. We have a wonderful fan in this community called Katie, who runs a website called Hanson Stage, and she clocks every song ever played right from the start to now. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And all other kinds of stats. So I could look up and see how many times Madeline's being played. And P.S., it's a huge fan favorite. You have no idea how much that song is so well loved and how much it means to everyone when it comes on. Oh my gosh, the joy. Like, it's such a good song. But it's been played 247 times, which is pretty great.
Do you mean played live or what do you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. That's great.
Live on stage. So what do you feel like when you hear that sort of stuff and how much it's still like 30 years on? Like, it's still such an epic song. Like
that is epic in and of itself. No, I love that. I mean, that's why I love songwriting so much. I mean, it touches so many people and makes so many people enthusiastic and happy, and that's what it's all about. So, you know, I have to give a shout out to Steve Laroni, who produced Madeline. He the original demo that I cut in the studio that day is sort of a mid-tempo kind of acoustic guitar, much quieter production. And what Steve did is he re-recorded the track he rearranged it so it's a little more of a rocking kind of upbeat thing. It's still the same tempo, but it's, you know, boom, bah, doo-doo-doo, da, you know, it's like, you know, it's like really in your face.
Yeah.
And that instantly makes you want to hop on your feet and start dancing. And he was kind enough to use the vocals that I recorded actually on the demo. So what we did is I muted all of the instruments and I transferred just the vocals to a, back then it was a two track, you know, reel to reel back then, that we didn't have, you know, thumbnails or hard drives back then, and took it to the studio and they flew it in, which means that they press play while the, you know, the 24 track machine is recording, and it records the, you know, this track into the 24 track vocal, I mean, the 24 track machine. And so it's the actual demo vocals with Steve's, you know, instrumentation underneath. So it's a hybrid and it came out really great. So I loved what he did with that.
Yeah. Does your original demo still exist? And can we
hear it? Yeah. Yeah, I'll be happy to send it to you.
No, really?
Oh, yeah, sure.
That would be amazing. Okay, I'm writing it down. You know, okay, I don't leave you alone, so I will keep.
Okay. Yeah, I just need your email address and I'll send it to you. Or whatever you want to send it.
To do it. Yeah, and, incredible.
Yeah, you'll see what I mean. When you hear the vocals, you'll know that it's the exact vocal that's on the record, but it's a totally different backing track. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got the song in my head now. And it's just it's and the way that like it here we go around again, like it's got just the way that comes out, even like in the voice, it's such a good song. So I'd be super interested to hear the difference between your demo and that sort of original recording versus what it came out with Stephen Laroney, it's funny, in especially when I talk to people who do have something to do with the recording of the record or the working of the record. Well, every single guest that I've had on, Walker Hansen comes up like that. That's their, there's always a story. He's in every episode. But the other person is Stephen Laroney. And a lot of people mention him, and he's a really hard man to find. I think he works with what's the band with Claire Grogan? He's in a band, I can't think, that I try and contact through that contact channel, but he's really, really tricky to get a hold of. But I would love to hear his sort of pieces of the story as well.
Sure.
Anyway, so have you had a chance to see the song live?
No, I may have years ago. I can't remember, but I'm not sure actually.
Yeah, they still tour quite a bit, so.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
No, we had a really good time. You know, I have a lot of family, actually. My father's family, his two sisters and their families live in Tulsa. So when I first met with Steve and he was talking about Hansen, and they were from Tulsa and there were these three brothers, and they had a, you know, regional hit with Mbop, their version of it, and this and that, I thought to myself, well, I'm going to call my uncle and see if he knows Walker. And sure enough, my uncle and Walker were good friends.
Yeah.
So there's another Walker story for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's too funny. I love it. I never say anything and I just wait for Walker to creep into every
That's funny.
So I really love to sort of, you know, if we're going to wrap things up, I could talk to you forever, but in wrapping things up, Have you got apart from the Caesar salad and the playing at the home, have you got like a favorite memory that sort of stands out in your mind through this whole sort of time and this whole moment? Anything that really stands out to you?
Well, I've highlighted a lot. A lot of the anecdotes I've given you are sort of the standout memories. The Dr. Pepper and the, but that I have to say that the first time I heard them sing when they first showed up and Walker had them sing one of their songs for me, that was the penultimate. Even at the beginning, that was su made such a profound had such a profound effect on me, and excited me to want to work with them and to come up with something that they really enjoyed, because you could tell that they enjoyed singing with each other and playing off each other and this and that, and that was really fun. And then also to wrap it up, again, and to wrap it up with my story with them and this sort of week-long time I was with them, I went to what was then a studio called the Music Grinder, which was in Hollywood, and that's where they were doing most of their recording at the time. And I went down, and they were typically Taylor, Ike, and Zach. They were just having a blast in the studio. Zach was running around like a crazy boy, and they were playing ping pong, and they were playing basketball, and I think they were even playing a little kickball around through the hallways and that kind
Awesome.
of thing to blow off some excess energy. And I also they were very happy to see me, and that felt good. We got along great. Again, they were just like family. So I've always wanted them to be happy and prosperous and have a great time doing what they do.
Love that. That's so sweet. And it must have been no, I get the idea too that it wasn't a shock because I think everyone knew how much talent they had, but could you have ever anticipated that that album had the reaction in the world that it did?
In the world, I wasn't sure. You never know about that. But I knew that I just had a feeling that Mbop would be a big hit in the US because it was so infectious and so fun, and it didn't really ask a lot of the listener, because it was just basically a riff, vocally and instrumentally. And it was just fun to listen to repeatedly. And you knew that it would be played on the radio. You knew that it would be played at parties and at, events. And I don't know, I just felt, I give that to Steve Greenberg for really seeing that as an annuity, if you will.
Definitely. Oh, Cliff, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much. It
Sure,
has meant
Megan.
so much to me and to the wider fan base to hear a little bit about that writing process and the creative process, because a big thing that we do, or that I like to do on this podcast, that's sort of never meant to start out like this, but we're learning a lot about the industry sort of through each episode. And it's been really eye-opening and interesting to have, those sort of industry insider stories for us to learn more about the business and the way that it all works. So thank you so much.
Of course, my pleasure. I love talking about my work because it's I love what I do, and I love sharing what I do and the stories. I have so many stories and so many great experiences having done what I've done. So thank you for being interested, and thanks so much for tracking me down the way you did. Because I mean, not tracking me down, you just kept at it, and I appreciate it.
Did.
Because yeah. All the best to you, Megan. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. You too.
Okay. Talk to
Bye.
you later.
See ya.
Bye bye. Sure.